You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Welcome to another episode of JX Outside. Each month, we take a look at activities happening outdoors around our region of Southern Oregon and Northern California. And it's early March, and we're back with our resident guides and a special guest. Joining us in the studio today are our guides. Nicole Larson is a lifelong trail runner and backcountry skier. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you.
In Rogue Valley, Ray Pettengill has climbed Mount Shasta more than 100 times. Welcome, Ray.
Hi, nice to see you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
And Jennifer Bray, she has 26 years of wildland fire experience in the Klamath Mountains. Welcome, Jen.
So glad to be here, Mike.
And we also want to welcome our special guests, Casey Botts. He's the executive director of Ashland Devo, a nonprofit mountain biking club for kids. Welcome to the Exchange, Casey.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate the invite.
Now, before we get into mountain biking, let's talk about this crazy winter weather. Mount Ashland ski area was closed for a while, and then it opened after we had a bunch of snow dumped down into the Rogue Valley. What's it been like for skiers around our region?
I've got some skiing in down in Mount Shasta Ski Park. Mike, it was actually a pretty good little short, sweet winter. We've got some great powder days in. Skiing the front country and a little bit in the back country as well.
Well, Mount Shasta always looks like it's full of snow.
Well, Mount Shasta, the ski park's on a butte lower down off of the mountain, but it was a great couple days of actual winter. There was some deep powder skiing to be had, and then the back country was nice as well.
It was some of the best snow I think I've had all winter.
It was cold.
This last little moment at the ski park.
There was a cold snap in there. It was light and fluffy, and it was good. And then it unfortunately warmed up a little bit, and it took a lot of it away.
And now it's closed.
Mm-hmm. Both of the areas closed just
a few days
yesterday.
Ago.
Mm-hmm.
Shasta's closed, too?
Yeah, they both closed yesterday.
What about the backcountry? How often did you get out there, Nicole?
I didn't have as many days as I normally would, but I had a handful of good ones. I would like to have said they were, like, amazing. They were amazing to be out there, but it was definitely not the season I was expecting, but it was still good. Exercise is always great.
And to me, it's not quite over. I mean, this is where the ski season kind of begins for the backcountry skiers. Once the snow settles, things kind of, avalanche conditions kind of diminish over in springtime. The spring corn comes out, and you can actually get up and ski tour higher on Mount Shasta and other areas around, practicing avalanche safety, of course. And the ski season kind of begins now if you like to hike and ski and get your turns and earn your turns.
Okay, that's kind of unusual. The ski season is starting in March, okay?
Yep. Well, yep. My favorite months to ski is March, actually, in March and April. And my favorite Easter activity is not Easter egg hunts. It's going skiing.
Okay.
So hopefully I'll be skiing by Easter.
Well, you mentioned avalanche, and even without a record amount of snowfall, there have been tragic accidents. Due to the dangers of avalanche. I mean, the latest incident was a couple of weeks ago in Northern California near Lake Tahoe in a region called Castle Peak, and 9 of the 15 backcountry skiers who were together died. Authorities say it was the deadliest avalanche in California history. Nicole, you're a backcountry skier. How do you prepare?
Well, it's really know before you go, as we've talked about many times on the show. It is so important to not just know the conditions right then, but what is coming. And that trip in particular, they were camping, you know, out in huts. So looking ahead is so important. And really, you just have to listen to the mountains. They do talk. And it's really important just to dig deep. But we are all doing what we love. And we just have to kind of look at it that way and be as safe as we can.
Yeah.
Right, Ray? I mean,
yeah, it was really tragic. My heart goes out to those victims and of course, the guides, the guide community in general. Being a former mountain guide and a professional in the industry, I feel the pain a lot because we've lost friends in these sort of incidences. And sometimes there's not a lot that they would do differently. They were coming out of a trip. They were crossing the terrain. And sometimes things happen, and yeah, we do these things we love with those risks involved, sadly. But there are a lot of resources in our area, especially for avalanche safety.
The Shasta Avalanche Center is so magnificent. Their backcountry rangers are out there all the time checking the snow conditions and stuff like that.
Yeah, ShastaAvalanche.org is the website, and there's fantastic resources if you take a look at ShastaAvalanche.org, and we can mention some of the activities and classes they have. Coming up this month as well.
Yeah, there's one coming up this next week. Is that right? March 7th in Mount Shasta at Deadwood. it's not necessarily a training, but it's a lot of education about what to look for. And, you know, it's just going to be a really good information. Like I said, it's not a training. It's just information, just to keep you aware.
That's one of the things that I'm concerned about. I don't know, when I think of backcountry skiing, I don't know that I think of slopes like downhill skiing. I think of more flat terrain, but avalanches occur on slopes, right? 30 degrees to 45 degrees.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Are backcountry skiers engaged in, you know, those slopes?
It's unfortunately the best ski slopes as well. So you do have to take that into consideration. The best slopes to ski are often the ones most prone to slide, and there's a lot of things to look for in the terrain. But again, get professional training, professional use of the right tools and equipment, a beacon, probe, shovel, and the correct training to use that through resources like the Rangers, Professional Guide Services, or Shasta Avalanche, which is a nonprofit resource in our area. There's another on March 19th from 6 to 7. It's actually a virtual seminar that they're going to be hosting. Take a look at ShastaAvalanche.org, Spring Safety on Mount Shasta. It's a virtual seminar that might be a good hour or two spent with the Shasta Avalanche Center.
Let's not forget to mention this is also for snowmobilers.
Absolutely.
Like, sometimes I think that's forgotten, that is just as important for them to be educated and supplied with the right gear.
They're starting to offer courses specifically for snowmobilers and people out there with power equipment, because it's really easy for snow machines to get into those conditions. I mean, how quick and easy and also heavy they are. They're an at-risk group for sure,
yep.
And we've also seen some fatalities in that industry and sector as well.
Can you spot an area that is at high risk of avalanche? Is there a way to know?
You can see them. You can see them from afar. You know that where they are. You can see the angles, the aspects. You know where the leeward slope is loaded. You can see, often see evidence of.
What does leeward mean?
It's there's the windward, which is where the wind comes from, and the leeward, where the snow is deposited. So it's typically where the more of the accumulation happens on the side of the slope.
Does it matter how many trees are in the region?
Of course, anchors, convex, concave, mostly the history of the snow. Again, I really recommend consulting with the local industry, the guides, and the professional resources available. I don't want to give too much advice here other than go see a professional, but there's so many aspects involved with what makes safer avalanche travel or snow travel and avalanche safety.
Okay, well, the snow season looks to be behind us, I think. Are there any other snow activities left before it all melts away?
Well, Mount Ashland has the SkiMo, and I would like to actually roll this over to Casey because he is a local here skiing there often. Tell us a little bit about the SkiMo.
Yeah, the SkiMo is a pretty amazing community event organized by local Ashlander Yuku Ibarra, and I think this is the fourth, maybe fifth time they've had the event, but it's basically a backcountry race. SkiMo stands for ski mountaineering. It was actually the newest sport in the Olympics in Italy this past February, if anyone had a chance to catch some of that action. But essentially, it's a mix of endurance and ski skills, and you basically point-to-point or loop race. So you start and finish, but you transition at different spots along the course. So once you go down to the bottom, you put on your skins, which help you climb uphill on the skis, and then you get to the top and you take the skins off, and now you're skiing. So there's a lot of dynamics in play to have a successful race.
If you're just joining us, I'm here with our resident outdoor guides, Nicole Larson, Ray Pettengill, and Jennifer Bray. Also joining us is our special guest you just heard from him, Casey Botts. He's the executive director of Ashland Devo. Casey, tell us about your organization.
Yeah, thanks. Ashland Devo is a local nonprofit organization with the mission to inspire wellness in our youth by building grit, resilience, and camaraderie through mountain biking. So we do that through semester-long programs in the spring and fall for kids from kindergarten till 12th grade. And most of those programs will look like once a week. The more advanced kids do twice a week. And they'll have two trained coaches with them in age-based groups, and they'll basically learn bike skills all around the area. And they'll start maybe in a flat park and work their way up to the trails and be able to go on their own adventures you know, learning along the way all the things that are important for being outside and being with the group.
Do they have to have their own bike?
Yes. So right now we don't have a loaner program through Devo, but there are several organizations around that do have bikes. Pedal Power has a bike trail that they'll teach 4th and 5th graders bike safety skills. And then our community is full of individuals who have bikes and families who are looking to pass these along and loan bikes out. So we have a Facebook bike swap page. And then also there's community events like the Ashland Parks and Recreation Bike Swap in April where people can help find bikes.
Well, it sounds like if you're starting at kindergarten, you're starting off teaching them how to ride a bike, period.
Well, we actually say that we aren't going to teach you how to pedal, but if you can pedal a bike and start and stop safely on flat, smooth surfaces, that's kind of the minimum. And we like to say that beginning mountain bikers aren't necessarily beginning cyclists. You want to learn how to cycle first, pedal, how the brakes work, how to start and stop, how to be safe there, and then we can move to off-road surfaces.
What's the difference between a bike and a mountain bike?
Well, mountain bikes are designed to handle a little more rugged terrain. So the main differences are they have suspension, just like a car would have, in the front and rear, so that it's a softer ride and it's not super hard on your hands or your joints, and they can handle the bumps and the rocks and the roots that might come on an off-road surface. And then the tires themselves are knobbier and wider, and those tires can provide better traction than the traditional road or commuter tire. Brakes as well, the braking systems are a little more robust and can handle the steeper slopes you might find in the mountains.
How do you ensure all the kids get the kind of coaching they need to develop their riding skills?
Yeah, we have a really robust coach training program that's centered around risk management and safety. So all our coaches are CPR first aid trained. We offer wilderness first aid training so they can learn how to handle emergencies in the outdoors. We do repair clinics for our coaches to learn how to fix flat tires and then teach those skills as well. And we kind of center everything around a you do you policy. So if something doesn't look right, feel right, we don't pressure the kids to ride those things. It's okay to walk. It's okay to ask. And we just create kind of like a safe learning environment through, our coaches being really well-trained in risk management.
Do you separate the kids out into different kinds of age groups, programs?
Yeah, so there's essentially like a kindergarten group, first grade group, a couple second thirds. Mm-hmm. There's 3/4-5ths because then we start to see the riders who really ride all the time become more advanced. So we have a beginner, intermediate, advanced for 4th-5th graders. And then in high school, middle school and high school, riders have the opportunity to join race teams, and we also have an adventure program for kids not interested in racing.
Tell me about the race teams.
Yeah, so we in the spring we run our gravity programs, which are downhill and enduro racing oriented, more focused on going fast for a shorter amount of time. And in the fall we offer a cross-country race team, which is more about endurance and uphills count and as well as the downhills. We participate in the Oregon Interscholastic Cycling League, which is a statewide league. So we compete with about 20 other teams from around Oregon in the fall.
And how many kids are on a team?
So for our cross-country race team, we have 40 kids. Most of them are from Ashland. Probably about 20% yearly are from Medford, Grants Pass. We've had kids from Shasta. And we some exciting news, we just became a club sport at Ashland High School this last fall season. So it made us a little more official, and we're seeing a lot more recruitment coming because we have kind of the inroads into the high school there.
Well, congratulations. How do people find out more?
Yeah, they can visit our website, www.ashlanddevo.org, and also on Instagram at ashlanddevo. We send out a mailing list, or we send out a newsletter via our mailing list, so you can sign up for a mailing list there for more info. And this is great timing because we are opening registration on March 9th at 6:30 p.m.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, we have to take a short break. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Welcome back to JX Outside. Joining me in the studio are our resident outdoor guides, Nicole Larson, Jennifer Bray, and Ray Pettengill. Also joining us is our special guest, Casey Botts. He's the executive director of Ashland Devo, a nonprofit mountain biking club for kids. Now, before the break, we were learning from Casey about Ashland Devo. In addition to teaching kids how to ride bikes, mountain bikes, you do have a fitness program as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. Our fitness program runs from December into February. It's about 12 weeks. And initially, that kind of came into play because we were trying to find a way to keep these kids together. And, you know, part of our mission is having camaraderie. So what can we do in the winter when it's cold, dark, and the riding might not be as accessible? And getting the kids together in this fitness program was the answer. So we do once a week for middle schoolers and twice a week for high schoolers at the Iron Haven CrossFit Gym. We partner with Iron Haven down in Ashland on Hersey Street. And this program really is about teaching fundamentals and body weight fundamentals. We don't want teens necessarily lifting heavy weights. So it's more about cardio, building endurance, and then team workouts where they can work on teamwork to accomplish tasks and motivate each other. It's about that lifelong fitness.
Well, that sounds fantastic. I know that my kids are dual sports athletes. So when they're out there playing soccer or swimming, I'm sitting on the sidelines. When they're playing basketball or football, I'm sitting on the sidelines. I feel like I should be out there in some sort of fitness area as well. Do you get the parents involved?
Yeah, well, in terms of the fitness class, there are parents who work out occasionally with the kids, but I'm glad you brought that up because one of the best things that I've found with mountain biking and actually all the outdoor sports skiing is that it's a parent participation as well as the kids. So I get to go ride with my kids and practice with all the kids that they're friends with and them at these races. And it's a little more enticing to me than just sitting on the sidelines. Yeah. So we have a lot of coaches because parents like to coach. So it just kind of builds that idea of like the whole family can participate.
Yeah. Any tricks?
Tricks like in the air?
I see kids do tricks on
so
bikes
we do
all the time.
We do have we don't really teach tricks necessarily, but we do have access to an airbag, which is basically like a big inflatable bag you can crash on and not get hurt. And we have had a couple kids do backflips, and we actually had a coach do a backflip once, which was pretty impressive.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Well, there should be more mountain biking activities for adults. Well, wait a minute, I think there are.
Mountain biking for adults?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a mountain biker, Mike. I'm more of a road biker and a gravel biker. I'm actually getting a gravel bike built. I'm pretty excited about the gravel bike season. But I stick my bikes biking to roads and flatter environments and maybe some hills on pavement. That's what I'm doing.
Okay, so fitness. What's the difference between a road bike and a gravel bike?
Well, Casey just explained what a mountain bike was with a fatter tires and better brakes and suspension. Road bikes would be skinnier tires, less rolling resistance, more aerodynamic, and they're built for speed. Like I think I mentioned maybe on one of the earlier shows about how I rode around Crater Lake during their Ride the Rim event that happens in September. That's my more my style of biking and how I keep on my fitness in the spring and summer. What else is happening for mountain biking and places to go?
Yeah, so we do have clinics set up for adults as well. So we're kind of just in the last 2 years we've added a women's group called the Wombats, Women on Mountain Bikes and Trails, and they meet weekly on Wednesdays. I think you'll have to check me on that once we get the dates right or the day confirmed. But pretty soon they're going to meet once a week and do a group ride. Beginners welcome. It's a no-drop ride, which means someone will stay with you. And we also have clinics to learn skills for adults, such as introduction to cornering, introduction to drops and jumps, and things of that nature. And that's all available on the website, too.
Okay. Well, switching gears, let's talk about what this winter season means for the upcoming fire season in Southern Oregon and Northern California. Jen?
Yeah, I don't know if in your yard your daffodils are blooming already, but with all this rain and everything, the grasses are sure growing. So it's a good time to clear around your homes, get fire ready for this upcoming fire season. There has been lightning on the radar, so kind of early, but
what does getting fire ready mean for your home?
Clearing debris, grasses and sticks, anything that can burn, clearing your gutters, making sure your roof is clear of branches and
rake around the house.
And raking around the house.
That's a really important area.
Yeah, making sure you have hoses and everything available just in case.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of fire hardening on my rural property with all the slash and doing large burn piles. And I'd recommend calling your local district, fire district 4 in Jackson County. There's a burn hotline you can Google. A lot of us are familiar with Siskiyou County, so to calling Siskiyou County burn hotline is really important on your burn days. They'll tell you if it's a full burn day or restricted burn day. Obviously, you have to have a permit for those burns, especially the larger burns, but I've been fire hardening. This has been a great season for that because of the lack of snow and the moist environment. It's a great time to burn. And I learned an interesting word called chunking.
Chunking. When you're burning your piles, and you got to chunk your piles in to make sure everything burns. You got to have a complete burn.
Right. Yeah. So when you build the fire, you chunk it back into the fire. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chunking. Yep.
So what does this lack of snow this winter season mean in expectations for the upcoming fire season?
It sounds like it's going to be early, and it might be a long one.
It's going to grow those undergrowths and potentially dry out sooner than later.
Yeah. And if you're hiking in some of these burned areas where the bigger fires have burned through, making sure to look up, look down, and look all around for any widowmakers in the trees, the branches that have fallen but are hung up in the other branches, and the dead trees, the snags on the landscape could fall at any time, and in not very high winds either, but winds are also a concern.
What'd you call them, widowmakers?
Widowmakers, yeah, because if they hit you, they can take you out. Some of those branches are pretty big.
Okay, so those are good safety tips for hikers.
And backcountry skiers.
And bikers.
And bikers.
And horseback riders.
Just be aware. It just adds to one more thing to be aware of when you're outdoors.
Yeah, yep. Fire hardening. There's so many resources out there for fire hardening as far as the FireWise communities, but it's the first 5 feet around your house. Is the critical areas to pay attention to. That's where the embers would come and land for potentially in getting in underneath your foundation or up underneath your eaves. So to really protect those the first 5 feet, then the next layer is 100 feet around the defensible space, they call it. But there's so many resources. If you contact your local fire district, they have maps and advice and guidance on how to take the trees down, gravel, seal up around your decks, around your soffits and eaves. It's really important as we get into the season. It's a great time to do it. You know, as a real estate broker, I'm helping a lot of my clients prepare their properties. Also for sale in a spring selling season, but also I'm helping them just give them guidance with some of my experience in this industry around things like that, creating a defensible space, when to burn, where to burn, how to burn, things like that.
And like Ray mentioned, if you go on your local websites, you know, Jackson County, Oregon.org has great tips on there. The Ashland website has great tips on there. And if you're looking on a bigger scale, the ODF and CAL FIRE websites are great, along with the National Interagency Fire Center website. They have some great tips and tricks on there, too.
There is an event coming up, so you can be hands-on and go check it out in Applegate. It's this March 7th, 10 to 4. And it's free. It's at the Rouge Outdoor Gym, which is a great way to go and just, like, really get educated on it. Because a lot of us, maybe not know what to do. What is this chunking? You know, maybe we need a little bit more guidance. So maybe an event like this might be good for most people to go to if you haven't done it. It's called Applegate All Things Fire Fair, and it's a free event.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know. As a reminder, I'm here with our resident outdoor guides, Nicole Larson, Ray Pettingell, and Jennifer Bray. Also joining us is our special guest, Casey Botts. He's the executive director of Ashland Devo, a nonprofit organization for kids. And don't forget, tomorrow is Rural Voices Day. JPR is joining public stations across the country to celebrate the first ever Rural Voices Day on March 4th, 2026. We'll be highlighting the role public radio plays in rural communities and our collective resilience in the wake of federal funding cuts. The day will feature local programming that highlights the people, artists, and organizations that make Southern Oregon and Northern California special. Join us for Rural Voices Day on Wednesday, March 4th, And you can learn more at ijpr.org/RVD. So with spring just around the corner, and now the weather's clearing up, it looks like a good time for checking out the constellations in our night sky.
You guys that blood moon last night was
Who's
amazing.
Tired this morning?
I was up.
Me too.
I set my alarm for 3 o'clock. Anybody else?
3:33. Yep. It was a blood moon eclipse.
It's pretty stunning.
It was stunning. And the stars at that point were quite fantastic.
Tell me about a blood moon eclipse.
Ooh. Well, it was a full eclipse.
It was a full moon.
And
for
it was
one.
A full moon. It was a full moon. And mm-hmm. they call it a blood moon because it looks of dark redness when yeah. that happens. Mm-hmm. And this one was special because it was at 3:33, you know, 3:33 in the morning mm-hmm. on the 3rd mm-hmm. of the 3rd month.
Yeah.
And you were up watching the moon.
Oh, yes. I couldn't help it. All my animals were, too. I don't know about you guys, but the frogs were going. The cat was meowing. There was no missing it.
I was in Ashland. I woke up to see it. But something that came to my mind is that the light pollution is real in the cities, the streetlights and things. There's probably a lot better places to see it, maybe down where you were.
Yeah, there was mm-hmm. full clear. Mm-hmm.
And if you have access to lookouts, lookouts are a great place to do with some stargazing.
What is a lookout?
A fire lookout. They're perched on strategic mountaintops around the region. And Herd Peak is right off 97. It's pretty accessible, but the light pollution is minimal up there. Beautiful place to watch for the Milky Way, the blood moon, the meteor showers coming up.
Any places around town where we can go out and watch the night sky?
Ashland, maybe.
Mount Ashland.
Yeah, or if you're up for a night hike. Pilot Rock.
Ooh, yeah.
That would be 360 views.
That would be amazing.
But make sure you prepare and bring lights.
Headlamps.
Rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Yeah. Well, with these clearer skies that we're getting, the birders are going to be out there as well. Any of you do any birding?
Yes. On my feeders, I'm seeing the American finches. The goldfinches and the grosbeaks. The evening grosbeaks are coming out. They're super beautiful yellow colors. But yeah, it's migration season for sure. The birds are coming in. I saw my first turkey vulture the other day. Lots of eagles. So if you're a birder.
Yeah, the bald eagles are happening right
now. They are, and the goldens. Yeah, they're teaching the juveniles. We mm-hmm. saw it in Scott Valley this weekend. Mm-hmm. Some juveniles were out there with the parents and trying their luck at hunting.
Where are you seeing them?
Along waterways, Scott Valley just had a bunch of rain, so it flooded. Scott River and Kidder Creek merged together, so all the critters in the pastures come out because it's full of water. And so the eagles and hawks are just having a field day.
And Scott Valley's in Northern California?
In Northern California, yep.
Okay. So any other outdoor adventures you all want to recommend? I know, Nicole, you do horseback riding.
Yeah, and I've been out and about. It's been great. It's good riding. Similar to the gravel biking, I guess you could say, because the Forest Service roads are all open. So for us horseback riders, it's a great time to go out and gallop, get our horses brushed because they're pretty muddy. It's good riding, though, right now. It's just beautiful skies, not so hot. It's exciting. So I have my little group of friends. We all get out. I would also say some vitamin D right now is kind of nice. So the Jackson Wellsprings is kind of a fun adventure. That's on my list. Get out there. Lay in the sun, and then, you know, even Chosu or Summer Lake Hot Springs, if you've never been, that's pretty awesome. And a great place also to stargaze. It is reservation, so it never gets busy. So it's not like I'm exploiting somewhere. I don't know, has anyone else been out there?
Been out to the hot springs.
Yeah, I've been out there.
Have you mountain biked out there?
I've never mountain biked out
there. Have
you
seen that, though? Across the way, there's mountain biking.
I haven't mountain biked, but I've done a really good hike to a lookout there.
I think
it's Hagen Peak, maybe, outside of Christmas Valley.
Nice.
But that was a really cool lookout. And it was staffed, so there was somebody who was up there, and they're locking up for the season. It was October, and they had been there for like 3-4 weeks at a time, and it was pretty cool. Just if you're in a solitary living, that seemed pretty epic.
Yeah. And you could keep going and go
front row seat to the lightning storms.
Further out to the Alvord Desert and Steens Mountains. This might be a good time of year to head out that way. There's Crane Hot Springs. I'm going out there in May for a motorcycle rally.
I love Crane Hot Springs. Mm-hmm. Have you been?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so neat. Yep. It's like an experience.
It's a hot tub the size of a swimming pool.
With black sand on the bottom, and mm-hmm. it's pretty special. Mm-hmm. Good birding there also.
A hot tub as big as a swimming pool.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
It's a good time.
Okay, so as a reminder to our listeners, if you want to contribute to this conversation, tell us about what you're enjoying outside. Send an email to jx@jeffnet.org, and we'll try to get it on the air in our next episode. That's all the time we have, though. Thank you all for your insights today.
Thanks, Mike.
My guests were Nicole Larson, Rogue Valley Ray Pettengill, and Jennifer Bray. Also, thanks to our special guest, Casey Botts, for joining us.